You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Down in the meadow in an itty-bitty pool swim three little fishes and a mama fishy too. Swim, said the mama fishy, swim if you can. And they swam all over the dam.
This is The Naturalist with Bernie Wides.
And Carol Butler, and we're back on the air, hopefully for another season.
Hopefully.
Of fascinating, interesting shows. Carol and I took the summer off because we were exhausted from all those shows and all that hard work. No, actually, Carol's working in, how's the book coming, Carol, very briefly?
We're waiting for the scientific review to come back once again.
Okay, so that's, you're waiting.
I'm waiting.
Waiting.
It's exhausting.
Okay, and I traveled around a little bit this summer, not very much. And today we're going to start off our new season with a show on a corporation called Local Oceans. And Local Oceans is an aquaculture farm. I call it a farm because, you know, we have all these other kinds of vegetable farms.
Right.
And beef farms.
This is a fish farm.
This is a fish farm.
It's actually, now, we talked about this before. It's actually called Local Ocean, but the website is localoceans.com.
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
Because probably Local Ocean as a domain name was already sold.
You said there was a fish store with that name.
Right. So yeah. They had to put the S in there. But
okay.
The organization is Local Ocean, and they have a beautiful website.
Yeah. So if you want to see their website, as Carol said, it's pretty well done. So you can go on the localoceans.com.
Correct.
Right? Yeah, so that's a little confusion. But here we are broadcasting from Roberta's, and we're going to talk about fish today and fish farming or aquaculture. Okay, aquaculture takes in more than fin fish because we're aquaculturing other things today like mussels and oysters.
I'm already getting hungry.
And maybe scallops. I don't know if we're doing scallops. Yeah, we're really...
Probably.
Yeah, we are. But this is a completely different kind of operation because this is a self-contained operation. And Local Oceans is a perfect name for this corporation. I went up to visit them in Hudson, New York, where they had this tremendous, beautiful facility. And they have one now in Greenport.
Right. And I was just in Greenport Friday night. My co-author on the Falcon book was doing a talk, and we had a book signing. And I had no idea. I would have made. We were there. We could have made a trip and seen it. It would have been fascinating.
Yes, if you went out earlier. But
yeah.
I didn't know about that one until I spoke to the people in Hudson.
Right. So this is it. What they have, just to be clear about it, because aquaculture has a bad name because of the fish swimming in their own waste. Right.
Right.
This is a zero discharge, 100% recirculating aquaculture system.
Right. That's the difference. Most aquaculture now is in a bay. And where they have the fish captured, and they feed the fish in the bay, and all the excess food that the fish don't eat just fall into the environment, and the waste from the fish. When the fish are concentrated, and they're all pooping at one time, more or less, you got a lot of waste in the water, causing pollution and a lot of other problems.
Mm-hmm.
But this facility, if any of you have ever raised a tropical fish in an aquarium, this is like a huge aquarium, because in the tropical aquarium, in your house or your business, you always try to balance it. So you don't give them too much food, and the waste is absorbed, and also you have filters. I know my friend had a saltwater aquarium, and he had what he called live rocks in the aquarium, which contained bacteria, and that was the filter The filters.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's right, because I've had fish tanks. Even with freshwater tanks, you have to filter the water so that the waste is processed out.
Right.
And you accumulate a lot of waste in those filters. You have to clean them all the time.
Right. Yeah. So this company, just very briefly, it's an Israeli patented idea. The guy who patented was a professor at a university in Jerusalem, and they did a pilot program, and then they built this one, the first plant in the United States. So it's a U.S. corporation, but the patent is from this Israeli idea. So here's what they do. Okay, first of all, they don't brood any fish, any baby fish, at that facility.
Okay, and it's also all saltwater fish.
It's saltwater. Right. Okay, so first, we'll talk about the fish, and then we'll get to the water, because the water is important, everything else is. So where do they get their fish from? There's a company in New Hampshire. I have their name down. I'll have to find it for you to tell you the name of it. I don't remember the name of it. But they buy their, as they call, stock or brood fish from this company in New Hampshire, who are growing from, well, what they do is, it's like any other operation. They pick out the best of the adult fishes, and they let them breed. And they take the offspring, and they raise them until they're the size of your little finger, little fingernail practically, a couple of millimeters long. And then they ship it to Local Oceans. And I think maybe that company there is part of Local Oceans now. I wasn't quite sure the connection. But it's the first on-land fish-raising one in the United States. So when I went to Local Oceans, I asked for a biologist to take me on the tour, and they gave me this nice young man. His name is Nir. That's his Israeli name, and maybe it's in English. I don't know what it would be, but his name is Nir, and he took me around the plant. So the first thing I did is I asked him where they got their fish from, and he said they get them from New Hampshire. They're trucked down in aerated containers.
Interesting.
And I said, how many do you get at a time? He says 100,000.
Okay.
Now, what do they do with these fish? If you go visit this facility and you look at it, it looks like backyard swimming pools. You know, above ground swimming pools?
Right.
They have, I think, 30 of them.
And you posted some photographs on the website.
Yes,
then.
And don't forget to go to the photo gallery after you listen to the show, because you can see the facility. They were, they gave me a nice tour, and I took pictures, and I used some of their pictures from that they provided for publicity. So they have these huge swimming pools, okay? And I call them swimming pools. That's the size of
them. That's how they look, yeah.
Yeah. And, so here's the fish. Now, where do they get their water from? They're called Local Oceans because they're not situated near an ocean. Hudson, New York is 100 miles up the Hudson River. And so where are they getting their water from? They're getting their water from the local water company for Hudson, New York, okay? So they're getting it from the water treatment, the water plant.
Right. It's fresh water with, yeah.
Okay. Now, so I asked him if this is, he says it's tap water, saying that you would drink.
Yeah.
So I said, well, what about the chlorine in it? He said the water is chlorinated. He said, but we wait 24 hours before we put the fish in. And by that time, the chlorine has dissipated. It's
just
gone.
What you do in the fish tank.
So that's what I say. It's the same as if you're going to raise fish and you got the tap water, you'd have to wait till the next day for the chlorine to dissipate.
That's right.
So he said the chlorine's no trouble because it dissipates, and then they use it. So I said, why don't you use the river water that comes from the Hudson, that it comes from the ocean? He said, we don't want to take a chance on the quality of that water.
Right.
He said, if it's from the river, there may be a lot of pollutants in it from the sewage treatment plants. He said, even if we get it right from the ocean, it's a problem. Because we all know that there are stuff in ocean
discharge
water.
Discharge of various kinds.
Yeah,
sure.
And mercury in fish.
And boats discharging and oil.
And,
right.
And if you get fish from inland waters, from New York City Harbor, there's heavy metals in the fish. So you can't really eat them.
Also, go ahead.
So he said, we're better off starting and we make our own water.
Right.
So I said, what about the salinity? That means how much salt is in the water. He says, we make our own salt water. We take this water and we add salt to it. Okay? And they bring the salinity up to 24% salinity. Mm-hmm. Ocean water is 35, 36, depending where you are. But he said that 24% salinity is fine. These fish are fine. Because a lot of fish, to spawn, they'll go up the rivers and into the bays and streams. where the salinity is lower anyhow.
Where it's lower, right.
Lower anyhow.
He said, in the salt marsh book.
Right, remember the
salt
marsh book, Carol.
Right, well, because you're getting fresh water from the rainwater
right.
On the higher elevations, and it's joining with the salt water from the ocean. So as you go upriver, the water is less saline.
Right, right. Salinity drops down. Right.
Let me just comment, this may be, I'm sure you have this in there, but I think it's interesting at this point. The model is to have, why it's called local ocean, the model is to have facilities like this in different places so that fish can come to the table quickly without a big carbon footprint, without having to be flown in and frozen and transported long distances. So this is really, that's also why they're using fresh water from the water system, so they can put one in the Midwest
anywhere.
There's no ocean and no lake and no source other than the local tap water.
Yeah. So the one at Hudson is there because he said it's in the middle of three markets. Boston, New York, and Albany.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good location.
Right.
You know, so that's a good point, Carol. So what they can do, if you have a restaurant and you want to order, 50 of this fish and 50 of that, and you call them up, and by the next day or the same day, you can have the fish right from their tanks.
Right.
So if you go to a fish market and you buy fish, and those fish may have been caught a week ago or even more,
right.
Because most of the fishing boats go out for a week or two at a time and they ice the fish down.
Right.
And so when you get that fish, it's really not that fresh anymore. But
And flown in from who knows where. That's the other point.
Yes, like salmon, right? We get a lot of salmon from Chile. So how did the salmon get here? They don't swim here from Chile. No, they fly them on air freight.
Right.
That's why the price is, farm-raised fish, the price is reasonable now because there's so many people doing it. But wild salmon, you know how much, that's very expensive.
Right.
So you're right. This eliminates a lot of wasted fuel and energy because all they have to do is truck it from Hudson, New York to Boston. And their other facility is in Greenlawn on Long Island.
Greenport,
right. So they cover all of the Long Island market and also New York City market.
Right, and Fresh Direct is taking their fish now.
Right.
And selling their fish.
And some other supermarket chain, which I don't remember the name of.
Which we forgot the name of. It's not one we have in the city.
No.
Yeah.
And also restaurants are ordering directly from them.
Right.
Because they can get whatever they want. Okay. So the second half of the show, we'll talk about the fish and what kind of fish and all that kind of stuff. I just wanted to talk about the operation. The tour that I took, which was a very good tour. So anyhow, the first thing I spoke about with them was the water. So we said they get the water locally, and they test the water and make sure there's nothing dangerous in it, and they put the salt in so it builds up the salinity. Okay, so they have the fish, these little tiny fish, and they raise them, and they keep them in their facility till they weigh a pound. Okay, but what they do is they keep moving them from one tank to the next.
Mm-hmm.
As they grow bigger, they need more room because when they first get them, 100,000 fish, they're tiny little fingernail fish, but as they get bigger, you can't keep 100,000 fish in a 16-foot diameter, 18-foot diameter pool.
Becomes a ghetto.
Becomes a ghetto, right. So what they do is they separate them out and into these other fish tanks or swimming pools or whatever you want to call it. So the density is not as much.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they feed the fish? Now, this is the big problem with fish farming or aquaculture. Okay, in order to have fish that are really healthy, okay, and healthy for us to eat, they want to have fish that have the omega oils in them.
Mm-hmm.
You've been hearing that all the time, that omega-3s, and I think it's omega-6, I don't remember, and the lipids, which are like fat.
Right.
These are the healthy unsaturated fat
that
we need for development, for bones and skin and teeth and all that stuff. That's why salmon is so popular, because salmon contains it, herring contains it, mackerel contains it, and bluefish contains it.
Right.
But some of those fish you really shouldn't eat too many of, because bluefish, so while they migrate up and down the coast, the bigger bluefish accumulate some heavy metals in the Hudson River. So there's all these problems with fish from the oceans.
Fortunately, I don't like bluefish anyway, so I'm okay.
Well, you get a good recipe, they're good.
Yeah.
You don't like the oily that oily.
I like salmon, but yeah. I'm not crazy about mackerel either.
Yes, I know you have to know how to cook them.
Spanish mackerel sushi, I like.
Okay, so anyhow, they eliminate the problem of contaminants in the water. So the first part of the tour, he showed us where a little fish come in and they start raising them, and then I said, well, what do you check for here? He says, every day, a few times a day, we check the oxygen content of the water.
Mm-hmm.
I say, you know, you with all these fish in one tank, where are they getting enough oxygen from? He said, we buy liquid oxygen in huge pressurized tanks, and they distribute the liquid oxygen. You know, under pressure, it's a liquid. It's like natural gas when they ship it in these big ships. And then when they release it into the atmosphere or the
into the water,
the pressure, it becomes a gaseous oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So they can control the amount of oxygen. And he said they found that as a critical factor. The more oxygenation in the water, the faster the fishes grow.
Sure.
And the healthier they are. So that takes care of the oxygen.
You were talking about what they feed the fish.
The feed, okay. So what they do is they buy a commercial fish meal. Okay, and where do they get it from? They get it from fish meal mills that make meal for other animals and for fish. So what does it contain? First of all, it contains fish scraps and wastes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've heard about bycatch?
Yes.
Okay. Bycatch is when, let's say they're going fishing for a striped bass.
Right, but they get a porpoise in the
They get a porpoise
in,
or they get a lot of other trash fish that they can't sell commercially.
Right.
So what do they do with it? They throw it back in the ocean.
Right.
But by that time, it's dead because they get killed in the nets.
Right.
So what they do now is they're trying to encourage more and more is they save the bycatch. They sell the bycatch to these fish meal mills, making it into fish meal.
Interesting.
Fish meal is a very high-quality food for fish and for other critters. So I asked him about sustainability, and he said, I said, isn't it true that you're using small fish in the fish meal, like sardines and anchovies, and there's another little fish that grows in the Arctic and Antarctica called caplin, and they're about an inch or two long. He said, yes, he said, but the percentage of those fish that we use are small. He said, I know, and that's the big complaint about aquaculture, is that they're using up all these little fishes that the big fishes in the ocean would eat. But he said to me, he said, what's happening to the big fishes in the ocean? There are less and less and less.
Right.
Not because of their food, it's because of overfishing.
Right.
So anyway, what else is in it? So they use scraps from fish, right? And they're using sustainably caught little fishes, like sardines and anchovies.
Mm-hmm.
Anchovies are like sardines, but they're smaller. And they're very salty. No, they're only salty when you get them out of the can.
Right.
So so they're trying to do everything sustainably. So what they do is they check constantly for the fish. I said, what about sick fish? I said, are you using antibiotics in the fish? He said, no, we use no antibiotics.
Mm.
He said, what we do is we monitor the fish very carefully. We take samples of fish out every day from the tanks. And first, we look at them. Secondly, they have a lab. So that was the next stop on the tour.
Mm.
We went to the lab, and there was a young lady, a lab technician. And I said, what do you do here? She said, first of all, she checks one fish every day from each of these fish tanks or swimming pools, whatever you call them. And I said, what are you checking for? She says, first of all, we do an assay of the flesh. She says, I don't do that. We send it out to a commercial lab that checks them for everything. She says, it checks them for calcium content, magnesium, potassium, all the minerals, and the lipids, and the omega oils. She said, what I do here is, she says, I physically take the fish and I dissect them, and I check for parasites, okay, because fish are subject to parasites.
Right.
The parasites don't bother us ever, but
They affect the growth of the fish. Right.
So what she does, she takes a gill sample
from
the gills, and I have a picture on the photo gallery of the slides showing the sections that she took of the gills to check for parasites and bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
She says, we want to see if these fishes are getting infected with a bacteria that can harm them.
Mm-hmm.
So they have very good control on this. I was very impressed with the lab. And she said, I can't do everything here in the lab, so we send it to a commercial lab to do the really testing of the flesh itself, to check for the minerals and all that content. So that was impressive also. Okay, so we spoke about the fish. We spoke about the water quality. We spoke about oxygen. Now, what about the waste from the fish?
Right.
Now, you have a lot of fish. I think they have about a million fish in this mm-hmm. place. What about the waste? Now, as Carol said, it's a closed system.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's what they do. They circulate the water, like you would in your home fish tank, through a filter.
Right.
Now, what does this filter consist of? This filter consists of, they have two filtering systems. One is anaerobic bacteria, and one is aerobic bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two different kinds of bacteria. Anaerobic bacteria can live without oxygen. Okay? Aerobic bacteria need oxygen.
Right.
So they're bacteria, but they're different kinds of bacteria. And what do the bacteria, why do they need this? Because the bacteria eat all the waste, digest all the waste
right.
from the fish.
Well, they convert it, right? Because fish waste, fish feces is ammonia, right?
Right.
And carbon dioxide. And so they process the ammonia, NH4 and NH3, so it becomes nitrogen, which is an energy source. Right.
Right. And by the way, it's a closed system. He said the only thing that we give off in this thing, remember, they're using all their water over and
right.
over again. He says the only waste product that we have is nitrogen gas.
Right.
He says, because we produce so much nitrogen, we can't use it.
You can't use it all.
So you know our atmosphere is mostly nitrogen
right.
and oxygen, so it's not really a pollutant.
Right.
Okay. So what they do with the biological filters, they don't have any other kind of filters.
Except they have plants.
That's the second part.
Okay.
Yeah. So what do they do with what's left over, the nutrients that Carol just mentioned? They have a system of feeding it to plants.
Right.
And I imagine someday they're going to be feeding it to algae that they can use for food, for fish. They haven't gotten that far yet. So right now they're raising, this is just testing, they're raising a plant called Salicornia. I didn't see that one because that's out at the Greenport plant. And Salicornia is a salt marsh plant.
Right, I recognize the name.
Yes. So the name Salicornia means salt loving.
Right.
So if you picked Salicornia from a salt marsh, it would taste like pickle.
Mm.
And that's what they're called, sea pickles.
Mm.
And they use it in a lot of restaurants, use it as a garnish.
Interesting.
And the French use it a lot in their menus. Okay.
Is it cornichon?
One minute left? Okay, so we have 1 minute, and then the second half of the show, I'm going to talk all about the fish.
Do you think it's cornichon?
No, cornichon are little pickles.
Right, yeah.
I'm trying to think what the garnish is. They look like little asparagus.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you've probably never really seen them up close.
Next time
we go to a salt marsh, we'll taste it.
Okay.
And try it.
Good.
I don't like to eat a lot of it because some of our salt marshes are not so
right.
clean, but you can try it. It really tastes like a pickle.
Okay.
So they're raising those in one of the plants, and the plant I visited in Hudson, New York, they're raising red mangroves.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if you remember my talks on mangroves, but the mangrove is the keystone plant for salt marshes.
Right.
And they're very important. So what they're going to do is see if they can raise them successfully, they can sell them commercially
right.
to people who want to reforest their coastlines.
Also, it holds the soil so that
right.
it's a good buffer against
yes.
erosion.
It's a very important
yeah.
plant.
Yeah. See, I remember your program on mangroves.
Okay, so I think our time is almost up for the first half, Jack. Is that right? Yes, here comes the music, and we'll be back with the second half of the show. In a minute or two, and then we're going to talk about all the fishes that they raise.
La mer qu'on voit danser le long du golfe clair a des reflets d'argent. La mer, des reflets changeants sous la pluie. La mer, au ciel d'été, confond ses blancs moutons avec les anges si purs. La mer, bergère d'azur infinie. Voyez, près des étangs, ces grands roseaux mouillés. Voyez, ces oiseaux blancs et ces maisons rouillées. La mer.
Okay, very nice. Let's get the last drop of that music. Very nice. Okay. I just want to begin with a couple of statistics, and then Bernie will talk about the fish. Fish currently supply the greatest percentage of the world's protein consumed by humans. That's important. And as the world's demand for fish exceeds available sustainable stocks in the ocean, aquaculture is increasingly important to provide the solution. I find it hard to conceive of the ocean running out of fish, but they tell me that it's true, so I don't know. I'm skeptical, but I guess it's probably true. Over the past 10 years, fish farming has been growing at an annual rate of over 8%, and by the year 2015, it's estimated that 55% of all fish consumed will be farm-raised. Well, that's pretty interesting. And if it's farm-raised this way, it's really an advantage for the whole ecology and economy.
Yeah. Right. That's why I was so impressed by this company.
Yeah,
because it's the first closed-loop system.
Right.
I visited other fish farm facilities, like when we were in Canada. They're growing these beautiful salmon.
Mm-hmm.
But they're growing them in a bay.
Right.
And with steel mesh netting around
it,
so the seals can't get in and eat all the salmon. But what they do is they feed the fish with fish meal like this, with pellets.
Pellets,
everything's
right.
Pelletized. They throw it in the water, and the fish jump up and eat it, and all that stuff. But what happens to the waste?
But then all the waste goes in a concentrated flow out from the net.
Yeah,
from
the net. It contaminates the whole bay, and you get a lot of bacteria growing, and it's not a great situation.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other problem with this fish farm I visited in Canada was seals.
Hmm.
Okay, they hate the seals. They shoot them if they have to, because the seals can almost chew through these steel mesh nets and start eating the salmon.
Well, you can imagine a delicious
net
these full of salmon.
These salmons were like 8-10 pounders.
Yeah.
They were beautiful.
Yeah.
And the other problem is that if these farm-raised salmon get out into the wild and interbreed with the wild salmon, it could change the whole salmon instinct of coming back to where it was produced.
Mm-hmm.
Atlantic salmon do that. They'll be impregnated with a scent of their home stream where they were born, and then they go out to the ocean and come back 4 years later to the same spot.
Right.
If their genetic makeup is changed by interbreeding with these, they may not have that gene anymore. It tells them to go back to Gaspé or wherever they came from.
Right, I guess, because if they're raised from when they're very young in a net, in a confined space, they don't acquire that identity of their original. Yeah,
sure.
They'll come back to the net, is probably what they'll do,
Just mate with the net.
Right.
And it's not the internet, so
right.
Everything is internet these days. Okay, I'm going to start to talk about the fish,
okay,
and then we'll add some more about sustainability if we have time. And I have some other notes. Yeah, well, let me just do these other notes first. Okay, so we covered what else they're raising is the mangroves and the Salicornia. The water supply I spoke about, closed loop. Okay, I just want to check that I hit all the highlights. Everything recycled. Okay, yes. Okay. Okay, so the fish that they're raising that I saw in the Hudson, New York plant are the following fish. One is flounder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Summer flounder, which are called, remember from your fishing days?
We just called them flounder. Fluke, you mean?
Fluke.
The big ones? Yeah.
Yeah. Summer flounder are called fluke.
Right.
Which are big flounders.
Right.
Okay. So, and everybody loves to eat flounders because it's
like
delicious
flounders.
Fish.
Yes.
So the description here, it says, often considered the most important, the flounder that they're growing is the local Atlantic flounder. So, and as I said, it's the, what do you call it, summer flounder.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was up there visiting, he showed me his little baby flounders. They were about 3 inches long. You know, really, these cute little flounders.
You remember when we went dragging, when we went to that marine conference and we did the dragnet, we got a little flounder in the net. I remember that. I had never seen one.
Yeah, on Long Island. We went to Southampton.
Right.
Now, one thing about flounders, the interesting fish, when the fishes are first born, they don't they don't, you know, these are called flatfish, because they're on the bottom and they're sort of flat, one side up, one side down. But when they're first born, they're like regular other little fish. They swim sideways with their two sides up and down.
I don't want to spoil your story.
So they have an eye on either side of their head. Right. But as they mature, the eye migrates over to the other side, and then they turn over and they swim with one side facing up.
Right,
and
parallel to the bottom. And they're white on the bottom and brown on the top.
Yeah, their camouflage is on the top.
Right.
But they get them from their associated farm in New Hampshire past that stage already. The eyes have already migrated to the top of the head. Okay, so flounder is one of the fishes that they're raising. Another one is an amberjack. So amberjack are a member, I think, of the same family of tuna. Okay? So amberjack, it's called the Cerolia family, and they're very powerful worldwide swimmers, just like tuna are. And they're found in the Atlantic and the Pacific Ocean.
You see them in the Caribbean. I've seen them in the Caribbean, but I never have seen them served anywhere.
Well, I think we don't see them locally here. Mm. I don't know why. Maybe they're not buying from local oceans yet. Mm. I don't know. Okay, amberjack is common in waters around California and Mexico. Mm-hmm. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think they're Pacific fish.
There's some other version in the Caribbean.
Yeah, the amberjack has a nice white flesh color, which everybody likes, a buttery texture as a result of its huge contents of omega-3 fatty acids.
Good.
So it's just like salmon and a really healthy fish. Currently, Local Ocean is researching three subspecies for commercial production to begin the first half of 2012, and they're doing it already. And the subspecies are called Local Ocean California Yellowtail, because they've been breeding them in this facility, other place, right? Local Oceans, Amberjack, Cerolia dumerale, that's the scientific name, and Local Oceans, Almaco Jack, which is just another common name for the same fish.
I wonder if yellowtail. I wonder if that's a jack.
That's a tuna, yellowtail tuna.
Okay.
But there is a jack called yellowtail, and they look just like tuna, so they're closely related, and they have very high omega acids and lipids in them. Okay, the next fish that they're raising is called white sea bass. Now, this name sea bass is used very loosely in the fishing industry. If they don't know what to call it, they'll call it a bass.
Mm-hmm.
Because a bass is a specific family of fish.
Right.
But the fish that we buy, I'll read the names of them. Some of them are not really in the bass family, but they call them bass anyhow, because everybody loves bass.
Right.
Okay? I had a neighbor when I was a kid. His name was Sam Bass. And he was a fishy guy, boy. Okay. All right. Let's get back to the fish. Okay. The white sea bass. White sea bass is a species within the croaker family.
Oh.
And you know, croaker fish.
Croaker, sure.
They make noise. They croak. You know, like, remember catching sea robins?
Yes.
When you're a kid?
Yes.
And they croak. They make noise. Okay. And is located in the waters from Juneau, Alaska to Baja, California. Their skin is silver and the meat is white. Larger fish are often filleted into steaks. A delicious fish, it is rarely enjoyed outside of California.
Mm.
That's interesting. White sea bass are now being raised in Local Ocean's facility.
All right.
All right, so we'll see them in our fish market soon. All right, and it looks like something like a mackerel.
Mm.
It's a streamlined fish. Okay, next one is the black sea bass. Okay, now I remember as a kid going fishing in Long Island Sound and catching sea bass.
We used to call them blackfish, right?
No.
No?
Everybody
is that different?
It's different. Blackfish are very slippery. Mm. I don't know if you remember them. They're called slippery bass.
Tasty. Mm.
Yeah, so blackfish are different. The Indian name is tautog.
Okay.
But black sea bass, if I show you the picture of it, you'll recognize it.
Okay.
Okay? Okay, black sea bass is considered to be one of the finest fish in the Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico. Black sea bass is mild, with firm texture, but tender at the same time.
this sounds delicious.
This is from the company, of course.
Well, right.
This species is also highly prized for sushi by the Japanese
and
for steaming whole in Chinese cuisine.
Okay.
So if you get a whole fish in Chinese cuisine, sometimes it's a kind of flatfish like a flounder, but most of the time it's a whole black sea bass.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's another one. The European sea bass, all right? This is a popular Mediterranean sea fish known in America by its Italian name, Branzino.
Oh, those are delicious.
Okay. If you go to a restaurant now, the chances are the branzino that you eat are fish farmed, aquaculture, because they come from the Mediterranean.
Mm.
And to schlep a fish from the Mediterranean, you know, you're not going to get it fresh.
Right.
Like a lot of ocean fish, as I say, those boats go out for a week or two, and either they freeze the fish or they ice them down. So you can get one from local ocean that was caught yesterday.
Oh, boy.
And the French name is loup de mer.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same fish. Okay? These fish have white tender meat with a soft, salty flavor and play an important role in Spanish, French, Greek, and North African cuisine. Branzino will come into production at our facility in 2011.
That's expensive too if you get it in a restaurant. So that'll be an interesting.
It'll be interesting to
see if the price in the restaurant comes down when they start distributing it.
It's a terrific fish, and if you want to try it, the best way that I like it is you get it a whole branzino broiled on the grill, grilled on the grill. If you go to a Greek restaurant, especially, they put olive oil, maybe some oregano on it, and some lemon juice. And it's fantastic.
Very simple.
Very
nice.
Delicious.
Fish.
Okay, so this is going to be this is being fish farmed already.
We have to have fish for lunch.
I think we should go out for fish for lunch. Okay, so those are the five fish that they're now raising in their two facilities, the one in Greenport and the one in the town of Hudson, New York. Now, Hudson, New York is a famous old town named after Henry Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And at the is it the quadricentennial that we just had, the 400-year celebration of Henry Hudson discovering the Hudson River? We went to Hudson River, New York, to spend the weekend up there. And it's an old town. It looked like a very tired old town that's trying to make a comeback, like all those Hudson River towns. And I didn't know about local oceans when we went up there. I went to local oceans this summer.
Right.
And I'm sure the town loves them. They brought in this huge industry, and they're doing very well. So, with the time left, I want to talk about sustainability, because that's the big topic in fish farming or aquaculture. So, Carol, did you want to add something else from the notes that you took
sustainability? No, I think that's about it. I had just researched how the biofilters work, but we basically talked about that, and you only have a couple more minutes, so I leave it with you.
Okay. So, I'm going to just... they sent me a paper on sustainability from the local oceans. By the way, I spoke to a gentleman named Raymond, who's in their sales department, and he was very nice and helpful. So I want to thank him officially on the air.
And they are really a wonderful fit for Heritage Radio. This is healthy, wonderful food. I mean, that's what Heritage Radio is all about.
Right. You could compare it to Hearst Ranches, who are growing beef on a farm.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
We don't need much wild beef anymore. Even while in buffaloes, you know, you can buy buffalo steaks, but they're raising them on ranches or farms. So I think this is the future of seafood.
Yes, I think so.
I really do, because we're overfishing. And just to mention about regulations, we do a pretty good job in the United States of regulating our waters for catching fish. We have a 200-mile zone that nobody else can fish in our 200-mile zone without permission, I guess. And we are doing a pretty good job of controlling the populations. Like the famous cod banks off the coast of Canada, the famous George's Bank, and there's another bank. A bank means an underwater plateau where the fishes come up to feed and all that. The cod are making a comeback there.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's cod from Canada and cod from Iceland. But cod off the coast of Massachusetts, I don't think there are any yet. And if you ever go to Boston and you look at the town hall of Boston up on the roof, there's a weather vane. And what is the weather vane?
Probably a cod.
It's a codfish.
Right, a Boston cod.
Boston cod, because Boston was so famous for that codfish and dependent on it. And by the way, there's a terrific book called Cod by Mark Holansky, the guy who wrote the book on oysters.
Yeah.
Terrific book if you want the whole history of fishing from the time that the Native Americans fished or the Portuguese came to North America before Columbus, before the European explorers. They were the first ones here, the fishermen.
Mm.
And they found these cod banks, and they didn't tell anybody where they were. So this English explorer, I think John Cabot, one of those guys, he actually followed them to find out where the codfish were being caught, because they came back with all these codfish, and right. nobody knew where they were getting them.
That's great.
And they pioneered salt cod.
Ah, yes.
So bacalao.
Bacalao. Well,
bacalao
right.
depends on where right. you're from, right? right. Did your mother use bacalao? Probably not.
Occasionally, yeah. yes. It was not a favorite, but yeah. we certainly had it.
You got to get all the salt out of it first. Right, right. Soak it in milk or something. Yes, I've had it too. Okay, so anyhow, sustainability. Okay, that's the big criticism of aquaculture or fish farming, that we're using up the resource of the ocean to feed these fish that are captured. But as the biologist said at the place, we're running out of the fish in the seas. Carol, it's true. We really are. But we are very lucky in North America that we still can get fish locally. I remember when I lived on Long Island, and I used to go down to the shore. Mm-hmm. When I lived on the North Shore, and I would walk along the beaches, and I would see Asian people. They were probably from Korea or Thailand with a big net. Mm-hmm. You know, you go with a big seine net?
Yeah.
So we used to seine for fun. To see what fish we can catch, the silversides, the spearings, and the killifish, and whatever else we could yeah. catch. It was nice to identify them, then throw them back or use them for bait. These people caught everything that they caught, they kept, mm-hmm. because they just wanted the protein. They didn't care about the size of it or what it was. As long as it wasn't dangerous to eat, they kept it. So people like that, you know, you can't blame them. They wanted the protein to eat. That's what's happening all over the world. Mm-hmm. So the Chinese have been doing fish farming for thousands of years, and the Japanese too, probably. But I think we need more of it, these closed-loop systems, so we don't contaminate the bays
right,
and the rivers.
That's the important part, yeah.
And then this article talks about comparing this with commercial farming. And he said that, so you gave the statistics before, right? About the percentage of protein that comes from fish worldwide.
Right.
Right.
Well, they said that the greatest fish supply the greatest percentage of the world's protein. That's it. I didn't have a figure.
Yeah. Okay, so he's talking about, okay, we have 1 minute left. I'll just mention this very quickly. The crops that we eat, the vegetable crops that we eat, mm-hmm. so what do they require? A lot of resources, right, in the industrial agribusiness.
Right.
They need irrigation water. A tremendous right. amount, okay? And they have statistics on that to raise fish needs the least amount of water. Hmm. If you want to raise cattle, it takes like 500 gallons, pigs 300 gallons.
Oh, I read that, yeah,
all
yeah.
That was in
a fish only need 10 gallons, they said, which I don't understand, but okay.
Okay, so it says, for commercial agribusiness, you need irrigation water, synthetic fertilizers, and pesticides, right? The cost of packing, the cost of seed, the cost of transport, and retail. Mm. So local ocean is local.
Right.
You know, if they transport it 100 miles, let's say, from Hudson to New York City or Boston, that's nothing. We get lettuce from California.
Right.
It's 2,000 right. miles on right. trucks and trains.
True.
Well, if we get tomatoes from Florida,
right.
that's about 1,500
sure.
miles. So it is a great way to go. And for humans, the future is a very crowded earth. And everybody's going to want the protein and the resource and water. Okay?
Right.
So a very simple one sentence about sustainability is, it says, sustainable yield, the rate of harvest should not exceed the rate of regeneration.
That makes it sustainable,
it's very
right.
simple. That makes it sustainable.
All right. And on that note... Okay.
Yes. We're going to have to wind it
I
up.
I think we need to end.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Bernie. That
okay.
was really interesting.
Thanks, Carol. And... hopefully, we'll have some more programs in the future on sustainable agriculture and farming.
That would be good.
So we're going to sign off the air. And remember that song we played at the beginning is an ancient song. Down in the middle, it's
Itty Bitty Fishy, right?
Yes, I remember that from my childhood, but a long time ago.
All right, we'll
okay, so we're going to sign off the air. Carol?
Okay, we'll be back soon. This is The Naturalist with Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wise.
Shangri-La, really la.
I'm wishing I could be that kind of fool.
Shall I twist your arm?
I'd say no more work for mine.
Welcome to the club.
On my door I'd hang a sign, gone fishing instead of just a wishing.
Papa Bing, I've stopped by your place a time or two lately and you aren't home either.